Welcome to the first Sound Off of 2010. This is episode 95 with the Sala Monster here on FCScoops.com. It is Sunday, January 3rd, 2010, the eve of the Monday night, well, let's call it the Monday night skirmish. It's not so much a war, between Raw and Impact tomorrow night. Both shows promising lots of fireworks and surprises, and we're going to get to that in just a second. A little bit later, I also want to just talk a little bit about the death of Steve Dr. Death Williams this past week. That was a really sad piece of business, and I'll talk about why and with some questions. I got a lot of great questions in the mailbag, empty some of those out, and go over a rumored WrestleMania lineup. Get to that in a second. But let's start with Raw this past Monday night. Vince McMahon's big announcement that Bret the Hitman Hart would, in fact, be returning to World Wrestling Entertainment to be the guest host for Monday Night Raw. This coming week, it'll be from the Nutter Center in Dayton, Ohio, which I still think is a fantastic arena name, the Nutter Arena. The Nutter Center, which is actually the same building that Bret Hart won the 1993 King of the Ring tournament and launched his feud, his 2+ years-long feud with Jerry the King Lawler. You would never know the two of them feuded if you listened to Jerry Lawler on Raw Monday night, because he was singing the praises of Bret Hart at every turn. And in fact, at one point, Lawler even called him perhaps, arguably, the greatest superstar in WWE history. Well, he's certainly one of the greatest, but it just felt a little weird hearing that come from Jerry Lawler's lips. But Vince McMahon comes out, just to skip right to the, get right to the chase here, announces that Bret would be the guest host, showed an awesome video package set to his theme music, which of course segued into a little deal about Montreal at the Survivor Series back in 1997, which I've gotten a lot of questions about over the last couple of days, obviously. And then Vince can't bring himself to stick to his guns, and he says, on second thought, Bret Hart will never host Raw. And of course, as Vince goes to leave, Shawn Michaels comes out, and this made me happy because I was a little worried that they weren't going to include Shawn Michaels in this angle. Maybe Bret didn't want to work with him, or, you know, they didn't want to jeopardize Shawn being booed, as I'm sure he will be by some people. I don't think he'll be booed the way he would have been booed if, let's say, this was happening in Canada. But Shawn comes out wearing that ridiculous skull cap because, of course, he's losing his hair. And kind of turns the tables a little bit. He doesn't want to talk about Bret Hart so much. He wants to talk about The Undertaker. Undertaker has yet to answer his challenge to a WrestleMania rematch. He knows he can beat The Undertaker. He wants Vince McMahon, his mortal enemy. If you remember back in 2006, the McMahons and DX feuded for well over a year. And Shawn wants Vince to do him this favor, and Vince, of course, won't do it. He says Shawn is going to have to make it happen himself. Not quite sure what that means. Perhaps we'll find out at the Royal Rumble. But Shawn then, of course, tries to stir the shit. I know. Highly unlike Shawn Michaels to do that. Certainly the Shawn Michaels of old would have no problem stirring up the shit. And he says that, you know, Vince McMahon may be afraid of The Undertaker, and of course that's understandable, but he didn't think he was afraid of the Hitman. And Vince McMahon says he's afraid of no man, he is fearless. And Shawn, basically with a wink and a nod, tells Vince, let Bret Hart come back to WWE. Let Bret Hart guest host Monday Night Raw. Only good things can happen. And of course Vince McMahon seemingly takes this to mean that Shawn Michaels would love to see Bret Hart again just so he can screw him again. And so Vince therefore changes his mind and says Bret Hart will in fact host Raw Monday night, and that's your confirmation. Of course, I first mentioned it on the podcast weeks ago. It was Dave Meltzer, really, of the Wrestling Observer who broke it as an exclusive. So this was hardly a surprise to anybody, but it was great to get confirmation of it. And it's a great way to start off the new year. 2010 obviously is going to be an interesting year as far as the wrestling industry here in America is concerned. And it kicks off tomorrow night, this Monday night, with Raw vs. Impact. Now, people were speculating what WWE would have in its arsenal. Were they going to take this challenge seriously? And I mentioned on this podcast that WWE really wasn't taking the competition very seriously, in that nobody is worried at all that they're going to lose to Impact. From what I understand, they're more interested in making this as lopsided a victory this Monday as possible, and hence putting Bret Hart out there tomorrow as opposed to maybe waiting a couple of more weeks. Of course, Bret Hart signed a short-term contract with WWE that started running effective January 1st and goes through the early part of April. So it's not like they could have waited much longer if they want to maximize using him. After all these years of trying to get this guy to come back, they finally get him to sign on the dotted line. They're not going to hold him for another month and waste a month. They're building towards something at WrestleMania. Now, what they're building towards, nobody knows for sure. You know, the safe bet is that Bret Hart can get back in the ring to do a safe sort of street fight with Vince McMahon, where he takes no bumps, and Vince McMahon basically takes all the punishment. Maybe Bret can take a low blow, but Bret's not going to be taking any blows to the head or anything like that. And really, Vince McMahon would probably be the safest opponent for him. And it makes sense, because Vince McMahon, you know, is Bret Hart in storyline, hates Vince McMahon's guts. And in real life, once upon a time, Bret Hart harbored a lot of ill will and hated Vince's guts. I think they've made amends for the most part in recent years, and they're not on each other's Christmas card list, but they're playing off of Montreal. They're playing off of emotions that are still raw, basically over a decade later. So if they want to go in the Bret versus Vince direction, I got no problem with that whatsoever. Because it also confirms that we won't get the once-rumored Vince McMahon-Undertaker match, which would have been a colossal waste of an Undertaker match at WrestleMania. Of course, they can go in a completely different direction, and I've gotten questions and Twitter replies from some of you speculating that perhaps they're going to go in the direction of Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels. I have nothing to confirm this, but I'm almost 100% positive we are not getting a Bret Hart-Shawn Michaels match at WrestleMania. I don't think we're ever going to get one, but certainly not at WrestleMania. It's possible that if we don't get Shawn and Undertaker, there could be some sort of tag match involving the Hart Dynasty, and maybe Bret can get in on that and be part of a tag match. So he doesn't have to do a lot of work. That's certainly possible. Maybe Bret will be a special referee. Maybe he won't even wrestle. Maybe he'll ref the Shawn Michaels Undertaker match. This is all just speculation at this point. But if they do something at Mania, it will be Bret and Vince, not Bret and Shawn. I'm almost sure of that. I was very skeptical up until this past Monday that we were going to get a Shawn Michaels Undertaker match. I figured Shawn threw it out there at the Slammies as a red herring. There was a lot of time between now and March 28th and that they weren't possibly going to do another Shawn Undertaker match. They still may not, but I'm more convinced now that we are going to get Shawn Undertaker Part 2. Now, I'm not going to sit here and argue it. I'm the biggest fan of Shawn vs. Undertaker matches you're going to find. I have a tough time believing that they will find a way to top their match at WrestleMania 25, especially if the storyline is the same. You know, that's what I'm a little worried about. It's one thing to have the same match 2 years in a row, but if you're going to have the same storyline where Shawn thinks he can break the streak and you don't introduce any other wrinkles or angles into it, it's quite literally a rehash of what we've already seen. And what we already saw was near perfect. How you improve upon that, I'm not sure, unless you introduce other aspects to the story. So I'm curious to see where they go with this. My eyes are glued to the TV set, and I'm eager to see where they take this. Now, as far as what did I think of the execution of the segment on Monday night, I thought it was good. I thought it was good, but not great. They could have done a little bit of a better job, I felt, of explaining Montreal, explaining why it happened, what exactly happened. You'll notice they never really came right out and explained what the whole controversy was about. You know, the basic story is that there was a match between these two men, Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. Something happened. Vince McMahon, the promoter, was at ringside and basically screwed Bret Hart out of the match and out of the title. And Bret Hart was pissed off at him, spat in his face, and hasn't been back in over 12 years. That's the basic story. The problem here, and why I really don't blame them too much, the wrestling world is far different in 2010 than it was in 1997. Now that they've almost reverted back, you know, we know about the whole PG direction. There's a lot of kids now that are a part of their audience. You don't get as much in the way of insider references and things that you might have seen during the Attitude Era. It's hard to come right out and basically say that Bret Hart was supposed to win the match, and he didn't want to lose, and so the promoter decided to screw him. Because that's just completely shattering kayfabe, which I don't think they want to come right out and do. You and I know the story, because we've been around long enough. I think many of you listening as wrestling fans, and even the ones who haven't, I'm sure you've already read about it on the internet. And most people can go ahead and do that, but to the casual viewer, I could see where they would watch that and watch the video and say to themselves, what's the big deal? I mean, we just saw at the Breaking Point pay-per-view in September. We've seen it a billion times, to be honest with you, but we saw it at Breaking Point. Undertaker was screwed out of the championship, out of the match against CM Punk by Teddy Long. The promoter, in this case the general manager, screwed somebody out of a title in an odd, convoluted, fake submission finish. And, you know, the next week, it really wasn't a big deal. It was just one because you knew he would and he has to, but MVP just looks like a jobber now. And he's much better than that. And we had seen... Looking back on it all these years later, it's almost comical, to the point of absurdity, that all of this happened because of losing a championship. And I know there was more to it than just that. But Vince's whole excuse about we can't have you going out on Nitro the next night with the belt, and it was this whole thing was basically predicated on a championship belt, when these days, championship belts, first of all, there's more than one, and they mean nothing. They mean jack shit compared to what they meant 10, 12, 15 years ago. So it's just comical to see how all of that happened. You can't say that nothing like that could ever happen again, but certainly not to that degree. The world is just a different place now than it was back then. So they'll have a tough time explaining this to everybody, but I think they'll be okay, because I think most people get it. Most people understand the basic story. It may even help bring back some of those older fans that have abandoned the product who already know the story, so you don't have to rehash it with them. But other than that, I thought it was handled well. And I am intrigued, just as you are, to see where they go with it tomorrow night. I've got my fingers crossed that they don't fuck this up. You might think, well, it's impossible. It's a money angle. How could they fuck up the return of Bret Hart after 12 years? Oh, believe me, they can. Oh, yes, they can. This is the same company that, in my opinion, I know some of you would disagree with me, and yes, they did do business during the Invasion in 2001. The Invasion pay-per-view that year did a tremendous buy rate, blah, 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 blah. You will never be able to convince me that WWE did anything but botch and fuck up the Invasion angle in 2001. And if there was ever, even more than Bret Hart, if there was ever a money storyline that you could have dragged on for a year and made millions upon millions of dollars hand over fist on pay-per-view buys alone, it was that. And they fucked it up. So I don't put it past them at all to mishandle this. Or they may do an okay job, but not the best job they can do. And to me, that's unacceptable. This is an angle that, quite frankly, I never thought would happen. But now it is. And it's been 12 years in the making. In my opinion, anything but a complete success is a failure. They have to handle this perfectly. They have to make people care. They cannot fuck up the return of Bret Hart after 12 years. Especially because they have only got him under contract for about 3 or 4 months. So this build-up, this march to WrestleMania, has got to be perfect. And I remain unconvinced that they will handle this properly. The other thing to consider here, there are people behind the scenes in power, or at least people who have influence, and I'll throw Triple H in there, because Triple H is not the biggest Bret Hart fan. There are people who are not fond of Bret Hart, who may well want to see this thing flop. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens. You know, where Triple H is concerned, there's always been heat there with Bret Hart. And you get different stories from different people. Nobody knows for sure except Triple H what the deal is. Obviously, Bret Hart, for years, has had nothing but uncomplimentary things to say about Shawn Michaels and Triple H. In his book, which I highly recommend reading, he has nothing but, really, nothing but bad things to say about Triple H. He doesn't think highly of him at all. Back in 2006, when WWE tried to get Bret Hart to do an angle at WrestleMania 22, they got him in for the Hall of Fame. Vince McMahon wanted him to be part of WrestleMania. He wanted him to be part of that match that Vince had, with Shawn Michaels. He wanted Bret to interfere. And it would lead to a tag match at Backlash the next month, where Bret Hart would team with Shawn Michaels, of all people, to take on Vince and Shane McMahon. Instead, Bret stuck to his guns and said, look, I'm coming in for the Hall of Fame. I don't even want you to pay me for it like you pay all these other guys. I'm going to show up. I'm going to accept my award, I'm going to give my speech, I'm going to say my goodbye, and I'm going home the next morning. And that's exactly what happened. And there was apparently some sort of standoff between Bret and Vince at the airport the next day, because Vince thought he could convince Bret to stay, and Bret said, fuck you, I'm leaving. Not in those words, but basically that's what he said. And so instead we had Shawn Michaels and God as tag team partners at Backlash, essentially a handicap match with Shawn against the McMahons. So back during that time when these plans were being formulated and Vince thought he might be able to get Bret to come in, I remember reading one story from a reliable source of a production meeting that took place prior to WrestleMania, where Vince McMahon was in a conference room with all the writers, and Triple H was there, of course, and Vince actually put Bret Hart on speakerphone. The people in the room could not hear Bret, but they could hear Vince speaking to Bret. Vince, of course, throwing out these ideas, trying to convince Bret to do the match, trying to convince Bret to do the angle, and apparently Triple H, who usually, when Triple H does not like or does not agree with something that Vince McMahon himself or somebody else is proposing in a writer's meeting, he has, you know, a pretty good poker face. You know, he doesn't show one way or the other whether, you know, what his emotions are, what his real feelings are at that moment. And apparently this was one of the rare times that Triple H was just sitting there rolling his eyes, and you could tell he was not terribly enthusiastic about the idea of Bret Hart being brought in. Now, that was 3 years ago. Have things changed much in the last 3 years? I say no. But Vince McMahon still runs this company, no matter how much influence Triple H and Stephanie may have. Vince is still the man. And if Vince McMahon himself is going to be part of this angle leading into WrestleMania, you got to believe that Vince McMahon is going to want this thing to succeed, especially because his name is directly attached to it. Vince would not want one of his own angles to flop. So there's politics involved here as well. I assume Bret knew that. You know, he knew what he was getting into when he signed the contract. I don't know what provisions might be in the contract. Of course, you go back to Montreal, and part of the problem there was that Vince had it written into his contract, a clause in there that stated within the last 30 days he had creative control, by whatever definition that may be to you, reasonable creative control over his character and how he exited the company. Now, if I'm Bret, I would be stupid not to put a similar type of provision in this contract, especially knowing there are people in power who may want to sabotage me. So the way this plays out is so... The thing about this that's so great, I'm so eager to see how it plays out on TV, but I'm almost more eager to see how it plays out behind the scenes. It's a fun time right now to be a WWE fan, and if you're a Bret Hart fan, you gotta be happy that Bret is coming back. It's something I don't think very many people, after all these years, put much stock into, the fact that Bret Hart might actually come back as a character one day and be okay playing off the Montreal Screwjob. And of course, there are people who will say, well, you see, this proves it was a work. Look, the only people that know for sure whether it was a work or a shoot are Bret Hart and Vince McMahon. I have never subscribed to the notion that it was a work. And you could point to a lot of different reasons why. You know, first and foremost, if this was a work, I've never heard of a wrestling work in my life where the promoter allowed one of his top superstars to leave the company to go work for the competition, which, mind you, still at that time, in late 97, was kicking WWF's ass every week. Allow one of his top guys to go to the competition for 3 years. That was the length of Bret's contract that he signed with Eric Bischoff. 3 years. Under the assumption that he would come back and they would reveal to everybody that it was all a work from the beginning. Now, a lot of things happened that people didn't expect to happen. Owen Hart died, and that made for a very messy situation between the Hart family and the WWF. Bret, of course, suffered that main concussion from the mule kick by Goldberg, and then kept wrestling for a couple of weeks and suffered a couple of more concussions until his doctor said, look, you get in the ring now, and you're worse. You're in a position where one more blow could be permanent brain damage for you. And, of course, it wasn't more than a year or two later that Bret suffered his stroke. So a lot of things happened that nobody could have predicted. The fact is, it's been 12 years. If this was a work, even in spite of all those setbacks, that's one hell of a long period of time to wait before you finally finish off this angle that you, created in 1997. The whole thing is just comical that people, even in 2010, believe that this is a work. It's not. It's very real. It affected a lot of people in a lot of very different ways. The best reason I could probably give you, quite frankly, during the lawsuit, I think it was Owen Hart's wife who had filed a lawsuit against WWF. I think there were depositions and all of this stuff. And Bret Hart, of course, I believe was supporting Martha and supporting the family, and it would have been very easy for it to come out, you know, during a court case like that, that, you know, this whole thing was a work, just because Bret Hart was obviously very much against WWF and saying things about WWF and Vince McMahon at that point. And all Vince McMahon and WWF had to do was turn around and say, look, you know, when WWF criticized Bret Hart during that period for being bitter against the company, all Bret Hart needed to do was turn around and say, it was all work. It's all storyline, fiction. I got nothing against the company. And that didn't happen. So, without answering each of the individual letters I got, I was going to include them in the mailbag. I'm just going to lump it all into one, you know, answer here for you. Montreal was not a work, and until you can prove otherwise, I would stop peddling the argument, because it really, in 2010, for people to still buy into the fact that it was a work, just because Bret agreed to come back 12 years later is just ridiculous. But of course, they are playing off it now, and for us longtime fans, it's a real treat. For TNA, it's not such good news. The news actually could not be worse for TNA, quite frankly, because in my opinion, Hulk Hogan has been seen quite a bit in recent years, for good reasons and bad. Hulk, of course, and his family gained quite a bit of popularity with the Hogan Knows Best reality show on VH1 a couple of years ago, and the Hogans have been involved in a lot of highly public issues in recent years, including the whole John Graziano thing and just a whole litany of different things. And, you know, Hogan hosted American Gladiators a couple of years ago. He had the Hogan Celebrity Championship Wrestling Show. He's been out in the spotlight quite a bit. People see Hulk Hogan quite a bit these days. Whereas Bret Hart, while Bret's, you know, had a book that came out and Bret does make public appearances, by and large, people practically think Bret Hart has been secluded for the last 12 years. I think there's going to be more people out there, old fans, current fans, casual fans, who are more interested and anxious to see Bret Hart for the first time in 12 years than they are to see Hulk Hogan. So when you put Bret against Hogan, in my opinion, Bret wins right off. And all the eyeballs are going to be on Raw Monday night. Now, TNA is stockpiling apparently a shitload of surprises for the show, which is both good and bad, and I'll tell you why. Look, I'm as big a fan of wrestling surprises as anybody. And there have been things that WWE has done over the years when they've come out and they've tried to promote something to death. And I thought to myself, man, this would have been so cool if this wrestler's music would have hit and he would have just come out and it would have been a huge surprise. The reason I don't think this was a wise move for TNA, saving all of these surprises for this Monday, is because TNA needed to give its fans a reason to watch, but also people who are not fans a reason to watch. Maybe a casual fan doesn't care so much about Ken Kennedy, but if they announce that Ric Flair is going to be on Impact and they hype it up for a week in advance, you might get more viewers that way. Now, I've had people contact me on Twitter and calling me a hypocrite. Why? Because in the past, I've said that ratings don't matter. They don't matter like they mattered in 1999. And that's true, and I stand by that argument. But that does not apply here, and I'll tell you why. There was an interview conducted about a week ago with Kevin Kay, who I believe is the president of Spike TV, and actually other Spike TV executives also. And the gist of it is this. The network has said that depending on how TNA Impact performs this Monday night, they would be open to moving Impact permanently in the future to Monday nights, which is something that the TNA folks, Jeff Jarrett, Dixie Carter, they, for years, Jeff Jarrett has been lobbying to get this show moved to Monday nights, which, of course, would be suicide. And I don't mean the wrestler. So this is something the company definitely wants. This is something they aspire for, even if it doesn't happen right away. They want Impact on Monday nights. And the network is saying, we'll give it to you if you do okay on Monday night. Now, of course, what Spike's expectations are for the show, nobody knows. If Impact pulls a 0.5, I can't fathom Spike TV being very happy about that. But if they pull a 1.4, maybe that's enough to give TNA another chance. And maybe in another month, they have a Monday night special. And if they do okay then, maybe they do move to Monday nights permanently at some point in the next couple of months. So because that is on the line here, and the network has said, they're dangling that carrot and saying, prove to us that you can perform on Mondays. It is incumbent upon TNA to do the best that they could possibly do drawing in viewers this Monday night. And for that reason, if they have four, five, six surprises up their sleeves, for them to not announce a single one is asinine. It is ridiculous. Everybody knows Hulk Hogan's going to be there. That's not a surprise. The only thing other than Hulk Hogan's appearance that TNA has announced is a Knockouts title match between Tara and ODB and a Knockouts tag team title match involving Awesome Kong and Hamada. That is it. They have announced nothing else for Impact. That is ridiculous on so many levels. There's been rumors of a lot of different people. Let's run them down one by one. Rob Van Dam. Is RVD going to be on Impact Monday? It's a safe bet that he will be. RVD has definitely been in talks with TNA. There are people who said he's already signed. I have no confirmation or evidence of this. In any of the reputable sources I usually read, they haven't confirmed anything, but they have said there is a better than 50% chance, and maybe even a better than 70% chance, that Rob Van Dam will be on Impact this Monday. Why would you not mention that in advance? Sting is going to be on Impact this Monday. That I can confirm. And I believe TNA was, they may have started teasing it a couple of weeks ago, and then they just stopped. And TNA has said nothing at all about Sting being on Impact on Monday, because they want to save it as a surprise, because he hasn't been seen since the match with AJ Styles. To me, that's not going to mean as much anyway. I mean, if I'm them, I would have announced that Sting would be there, because maybe people would be interested in the dynamic of Sting and Hulk Hogan on the same show for the first time since the Nitro days. But to me, Sting doesn't mean as much. First of all, Sting has never meant much at all to the ratings, even back in WCW. People like to think of Sting as this big-time star, and he is. I mean, I look at Sting as a big star, maybe even Hall of Fame-worthy, but Sting never moved the ratings needle at all. So, between that and the fact that we just saw Sting a couple of weeks ago, really, whether or not Sting is there to me is not a big deal. But if you got RVD under contract, why not announce that? If you have Mr. Kennedy coming in as Ken Anderson, which again, there's a better than 70%, in fact, there's probably a better than 80% chance of him being there on Monday night, why wouldn't you announce that? Even more importantly than RVD or Kennedy, if you have Ric Flair under contract, of all the names, other than Hogan, if you wanted to mention one of these guys, Ric Flair could very well bring in viewers. Ric Flair, as opposed to Sting, has always meant something to the ratings. His segments over the years on Raw, when he would come and go, would do better than anyone else's segment on the show. Flair could really help make a difference, not just because of the ratings, but there may be older fans that are Ric Flair fans that would come back to see him on Impact. Because Flair, domestically, has not wrestled a match since WrestleMania 24. Almost 2 years ago. Now, is Ric Flair under contract? Nobody seems to know. Flair has definitely had discussions. Flair has been waiting right down to the wire. He would entertain a WWE offer as well, but as far as I know, he has not gotten one. So will Ric Flair be on Impact Monday? In my opinion, there's a better than 50% chance. Not as good of a chance as RVD or Kennedy. I would much more than Flair expect them to be there, but Flair could very well be there. They're doing a good job of keeping things under wraps. In my opinion, they're doing too good of a job, because they should have leaked some of these names. If you've got five or six surprises, why the hell can't you announce two or three of them in advance and save one or two for the show? Especially when WWE is throwing Bret the Hitman Hart out there, you've got to do more than what you've done. The only good thing that TNA has done to hype this show, the one thing I give them credit for, is paying for the ads. That you may have seen these ads. For those of you who have watched Raw on USA the last 2 or 3 weeks, you've also seen Hulk Hogan and TNA Impact ads during Raw. That is smart. That is something they should have done, and they did it, and I give them credit for it, and I give Spike TV credit for it. But other than that, TNA has done a piss-poor job of hyping this show. How did they not realize that in the 2 weeks leading up to January 4th, Impact would essentially not be on the air, because Christmas they were not on, and then the next week was New Year's Eve? How many people do you really think were watching 4 hours of Impact, especially a show that was mostly dedicated to the females? And I know that the Knockouts usually do pretty well in the quarter-hour ratings, but let's be honest, ain't nobody but the hardcore of hardcore fans sitting at home on New Year's Eve watching Impact. And if you were one of those people, you were one of the few. Because I guarantee you, that Impact rating, which probably won't come in until the, probably it'll come in around the time the January 4th rating comes in, because they're always delayed around the holidays, but I'm willing to bet that show did not do very well. And then you've got your January 4th show. Why not? Why did it have to be January 4th? Why not January, what's the next Monday? January 10th, 11th? The 11th. Although they've got competition from Raw and UFC that night, so that wouldn't be too bright. But January 18th, I just think if they would have looked at the calendar, they would have realized January 4th may not have been the best day to do this. But they did it, and I don't think they've done a very good job of hyping it up. I really don't. And if they've got all these surprises, Vince Russo, Eric Bischoff, they've gone on their Facebook pages, on their Twitter pages, talking about all these surprises, and they've mentioned nothing. They've confirmed nothing to anybody. They're just hoping that people will tune in, and people will tune in during that first hour. I do think the 8 to 9 p.m. hour will do the best for Impact because it's a three-hour show, but once Raw goes on at 9 o'clock, it's going to be like a wave crashing down as people just swim over to the other channel because they're going to want to see Bret Hart. And Raw, you know, it looks like a pretty good show on Monday, besides Bret Hart being there. And I can confirm, by the way, that the Hart Dynasty has been called. They have been summoned to Raw Monday night. So there will be some sort of involvement between Bret and the Hart Dynasty, which is cool. There's going to be a unified tag title match where Jericho gets one more shot against DX. Part of me still thinks that Bret will somehow screw them over. I hope he does. I hope that's exactly what happens, actually. I do not want to see Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels make up and shake hands. I think if you do that, do it later on. Keep milking the heat between Bret and Shawn, because that's the realest thing you've got going on that show, is that heat between Bret and Vince and Bret and Shawn. And you've got a Randy Orton Kofi Kingston match, which should be pretty good. And there's rumors that maybe Booker T might come back to Raw. You know, I mention it just because I've seen the rumors going around more and more often the last 24 to 48 hours. I don't know if Booker T is going to be there. I know he's had talks with WWE. I could see where they would maybe throw him on the show as kind of a fuck you to TNA. Although I do think TNA is much better off without Booker T. And quite frankly, I have no interest in seeing Booker T back in WWE. Especially if he's going to act like a jackass like he did at the end of his TNA run. You know, making a mockery out of everything and being quite the cancer, apparently, behind the scenes. So I don't think WWE really needs that, quite frankly, in their locker room, but we'll see. Now, the other thing I just noticed on his Twitter page, Shannon Moore, who wrestled on the Hulkamania tour, and apparently Shannon Moore went out there every night and probably had the best match of the night, which speaks volumes about the talent on that tour, was contacted earlier today, Sunday, by Hulk Hogan, and was told, whatever plans you have, drop them and drive down to Orlando. So Shannon Moore is on his way to Orlando tomorrow, the day of the show, to meet with Hulk Hogan. Why Hulk Hogan would care enough the day of the big show to meet with Shannon Moore, no offense to Shannon, he's a great athlete, but he doesn't mean dick to the ratings, and he's not going to mean shit to people's overall interest in TNA. He'd make a fine addition, I guess, to the roster and the X division, but why they need to worry about Shannon Moore on January 4th, I'm not sure. But the interesting thing about this is that on his Twitter page, Jeff Hardy posted that he and his girlfriend are going to be accompanying Shannon down to Orlando. Jeff Hardy is driving down to Florida with Shannon Moore to go backstage, to go to the Impact taping, so he can put in a good word for his buddy. This is going to stir a lot of things around, rumors that Jeff Hardy is going to TNA. Maybe he is. I really, really doubt that. I really don't think Jeff Hardy is going to TNA, and I'll tell you why. First of all, Jeff Hardy's not going anywhere before his hearing. This hearing that keeps getting delayed to find out whether or not they're going to press charges and kind of move on with the charges against him keeps getting delayed. I believe the new date is either next week or the week after, but I don't think Jeff's doing anything before that. Jeff wants to know where things lie. He wants to know whether or not he's going to have to fight this legally or if they're going to drop the charges against him, and then I think he'll make his move. Now, this kind of takes me over to the WWE side for a second. I mentioned earlier the WrestleMania card is starting to take shape. And by the way, before I get into the WrestleMania card, I'm jumping back and forth because there's so much going on here, but one other name that has been rumored, actually two other names that have been rumored, I'm sorry, four other names, my God. Too many fucking names. A couple of other names rumored for Impact on Monday night. I think I got them all listed here right in front of me. I'm trying to be organized here. There's a lot going on. Scott Hall and Sean Waltman, you may have heard. Rumors that the former NWO members would be back on Impact Monday night, perhaps to reform their little clique with their buddy Kevin Nash, and maybe even Hogan. Maybe they'll run a storyline where Nash and Hall and Waltman want to reform the NWO and run roughshod with the Hulkster, but the Hulkster says, no, brother, you know, Hulkster is the babyface. He's here to help TNA. I don't know where they're going with this, but apparently they're going to bring in Sean Waltman and Scott Hall. Here's my thoughts on this. It's a bad move. I have nothing else to say. Waltman is a talent. Waltman used to be a lot more talented than he is now, but now he's older. He's got more injuries. And while not as much as his buddy Scott Hall, Waltman has not proven to be completely reliable. He's been wrestling mostly in Mexico the last couple of years. He's missed certain bookings. I'd be a little worried. But I'd rather take Sean Waltman over Scott Hall. Scott Hall is, quite frankly, an embarrassment. He is an embarrassment. And TNA, better than anybody else, should know better than to bring back Scott Hall. They have tried. They have, in fact, brought in Scott Hall at least twice, if not three times before. Hall came in once many years ago during the early days of TNA. He didn't mean shit to the product. Nobody cared. I could have told you that, by the way, because when the NWO reformed in WWE, you had your best shot of getting the NWO hot again, and nobody cared. At first they did. I did. After a couple of weeks, it didn't matter because they were just like anybody else. They didn't treat them as outsiders. They were just another wrestler in WWE. Of course, Scott Hall was the first one to get fired, which there were people literally backstage at WWE taking bets on how long it would take for that to happen. And that was one of the reasons Steve Austin did not want to wrestle Scott Hall at WrestleMania. He was convinced that Hall would fuck up before then, and Austin's big WrestleMania match would go down the shitter. So that was one of the many reasons why Austin was very unhappy back in 2002, and of course later on he did walk out on the company. The last time TNA tried to bring in Scott Hall no-showed a pay-per-view. And you may remember, I believe it was, I want to say Final Destination 06, but I could be wrong. And they had Samoa Joe come out and cut a shoot promo on Scott Hall and the older guys who fuck over the younger guys, and Kevin Nash took great umbrage to that shoot promo and caused all sorts of friction, and then everybody made up. This is not a pay-per-view, but this is the biggest show TNA has ever held. And the only thing they have going for it in this case, the only reason that it's a good thing they didn't announce Scott Hall's name beforehand, is because of all the surprises they may have up their sleeves, I too would not have announced Scott Hall's name, because I would remain very skeptical that Scott Hall will even show up. But he is expected to be there on Monday night. Let's see if he shows up. Paul Heyman is another name. People saying that when Impact goes on the air tomorrow night, you may see the first face on your TV screen be Paul Heyman. Again, I haven't heard anything other than rumors, so I cannot confirm it. I would be surprised if Heyman was to come on board with people like Bischoff and Russo, but stranger things have happened. Vince Russo is still part of the whole operation, at least for now, and he's going to be working, at least initially, with Bischoff and Hogan, and that surprises me even more. So anything is possible. All of these names are up for grabs. And Tommy Dreamer, of course, who just got a big send-off on ECW, I'm 99.9% positive Tommy Dreamer is going to TNA. The only question is in what capacity, because I would be stunned if Tommy didn't have some sort of non-compete that prevented him from being on TV on Monday night. But I'm almost sure that Tommy Dreamer is going to TNA, and maybe that's one argument, you know, why Paul Heyman may follow suit. Him and Tommy are very close. Maybe they want to work together again. Anything's possible. But shifting back over to WWE for a second, and the rumored WrestleMania card coming up, of course, March 28th, WrestleMania 26. The one thing WWE is really doing good right now, and I hope I can add the Bret Hart angle onto that, depending on where they go with it. Hopefully they'll do good things with it. But I like the fact that they're already, early in the year, moving towards WrestleMania. They have a plan for WrestleMania, whereas on certain years, like last year, if I remember correctly, maybe other than the very top storyline, they didn't have any plans on where they wanted to go. And the WrestleMania card itself really didn't form until the last several weeks before the pay-per-view. And for WrestleMania, you can't book on the fly. You have to have some sort of plan, like even pre-Rumble. And it seems like they have that plan now. Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker, they're building nicely towards that. It looks like they may be building to something with Bret Hart and Vince McMahon. But what about the other matches? What about the other rumored matches? Let's break down what the card looks like right now. obviously WWE is counting on Edge making a comeback in time for WrestleMania so that he can face Chris Jericho. When Edge comes back, he is expected to be a babyface, to feud with his former tag partner Chris Jericho, who has talked trash off and on about him the last several months. But it's going to completely depend on how quickly he comes back from his Achilles heel injury. He seems to be progressing nicely. I think unless he starts taking bumps in the ring to really get a feel for how he feels, we're not going to know for sure until the end of the month. But they are assuming that Edge is going to be back in time to face Jericho, and Jericho won't be defending the Unified Tag Belts, let's say, for example. So that's one rumored match. Another rumored match is Triple H and Sheamus for the WWE Championship, which shouldn't be all that shocking. A, that Triple H would insert himself into a title match, and B, that Triple H would want to work with his young, up-and-coming protege. It's no secret that Sheamus is Triple H's workout buddy. Triple H has said good things about Sheamus to management, about how hard of a worker he is. He's a student. He listens. Nothing wrong with that if Triple H wants to help, you know, move a young guy to the next level. You know, but as I've said before, there are far more talented people, young guys that have been in that company far longer than Sheamus, who probably deserve the opportunity first. But that's neither here nor there. If Shawn Michaels is going to be involved in a match with The Undertaker, it leaves Triple H in limbo, and it makes sense to put him in a title match with Sheamus. So I got no problem with that if that's the direction they want to go in. Jeff Hardy and CM Punk is a match that I've seen listed on some lineups. Again, it's wishful thinking, I think, on WWE. No, not wishful thinking so much, but WWE is hopeful that A, Jeff won't go to TNA, B, Jeff's problems are going to go away soon, and he won't be up against a real big legal battle, that this will all blow off basically in the next month or two. And that when that happens, Jeff is going to want to come back to WWE, which he may well want to do. If he does, there's a built-in storyline waiting for him with CM Punk. Punk has been burying Jeff ever since Jeff left the company. Comes out every week and talks about Jeff Hardy the enabler, Jeff Hardy the drug addict. And so WWE is hopeful that Jeff will be back in time for WrestleMania. They always assumed that he would be back in the company by WrestleMania anyway. And if he is, he's got a match ready-made with CM Punk. Randy Orton and Ted DiBiase. DiBiase was talked about for the longest time as getting a babyface turn before his movie came out, so that he can promote it and it can sell more copies. Because people, I guess, won't buy the movie if the lead character is a heel on WWE TV. I don't know. And that was the belief. And that was the plan originally. And, of course, plans change. And I can tell you that was the plan originally because there was an awesome angle on Raw a couple of months back where DiBiase, it was seemingly the beginnings of a DiBiase split from Legacy. And then they just completely dropped the angle after that and moved on to Randy Orton and Kofi Kingston, and it was never mentioned again. Now it seems like they may be planting the seeds for a Legacy split, or perhaps for Orton and Cody Rhodes to dump DiBiase from Legacy. It was interesting. If you paid any, and I really didn't notice this. I'll be honest with you. I didn't notice it the first time, but when I saw people discussing it online, I had to go back and watch it, and it was very subtle. When Orton came out on Raw Monday and said that he felt like dissolving Legacy. These guys were losers. They were bringing him down. But he said, I'll give you a reprieve. Each one of you has a match, and if you win the match, you stay in Legacy. When DiBiase won, Orton didn't seem all that impressed. When Cody Rhodes won, Orton did seem impressed. He clapped. He left with Cody Rhodes. To me, they may be planting the seeds for a DiBiase babyface turn at long last. Of course, the movie is already out. I'm sure the movie wasn't really going to sell that well anyway. We'll find out soon how the movie has been doing, but the plan as of right now, because they're not going to drag Kofi Kingston or Randy Orton through to WrestleMania, especially because we've already seen the match three times and we're going to see it a fourth time on Monday, is for DiBiase to break away from Legacy and face Randy Orton, which I think could be a hell of a match. The one match DiBiase and Orton had on Raw many months ago was really, really good. So again, I have no problem with that. The most interesting match to me is the match for John Cena. If you look at the top guys in WWE, a lot of them are taken up. Undertaker has a match with Michaels. Triple H has a match with Sheamus. You have Orton and DiBiase. Edge and Jericho. Again, all of these matches are subject to change. But as of right now, this is the rumored card. where does John Cena fit into all this, especially if he's not going to be in one of the championship matches? The answer is, there are two names floating around for opponents for John Cena for WrestleMania. One is Batista. This would be a rematch from the one match that the two of them had at SummerSlam back in 08. Batista beat John Cena clean in that match. And, of course, the storyline there was that John Cena hurt his neck, and that's why he had to have neck surgery. Of course, that's not true. John hurt his neck. I think it was more wear and tear. It wasn't just one match, but that was the storyline, and they can play off that storyline. They never did have the Batista-Cena rematch, which was originally slated for WrestleMania earlier this year, but, of course, Batista was hurt. Big surprise. However, I can tell you that WWE is trying very, very hard to get Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, to agree to a match at WrestleMania this year with John Cena. Now, this should come as a surprise to nobody because they've tried to get The Rock in for the last couple of years and he always turns them down, either because he doesn't want to do it or because he has other movie commitments. Rock is not against doing something with WWE. He's actually planning on guest hosting at some point, maybe in March. It just depends on his movie schedule. But The Rock, the one thing he has been steadfast about is that he is not interested in wrestling a match. And I don't really see that changing, quite frankly. But, you know, WWE is persistent if nothing else. They will pitch a good storyline and they will try as hard as they can. Because let's face it, if The Rock were to agree and come in and face John Cena, I'm almost positive John Cena would either have to be the heel in this match or he would just get booed out of the building regardless. But that match is a license to print money, in my opinion. And if you slap a Rock-John Cena match on a WrestleMania show with a Bret Hart match, maybe against Vince McMahon, and a Shawn Michaels-Undertaker rematch, and some solid matches on the undercard, like maybe Orton and DiBiase and Jericho and Edge, Punk and Hardy, Money in the Bank, you've got one hell of a WrestleMania lineup there. So I can tell you they are actively trying to get The Rock to come in. They're hopeful that maybe even Bret Hart coming in will help change The Rock's mind. The Rock and Bret Hart are good friends. They're allies. Back from when they were both on the WWF roster and Rock was a young guy. And the one thing that Rock and Bret always had in common was that they weren't very fond of Shawn Michaels and Triple H. Maybe Bret coming back will influence The Rock's decision. Nobody really knows for sure. But they are trying. And that would be one hell of a match. And in my opinion, the only match that would trump Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker going on last on the show. I mean, if they do Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker again, and they don't put that match on last, they're idiots. There is no other match on that show, not even a Bret Hart match. And you can't put Bret's match on last because you don't know what he's capable of giving you in the ring. He may not be able to go more than 10 minutes. He may not be very good. But if you have a Rock-John Cena match, that's your WrestleMania main event right there. So this will all become more crystal clear as we forge on to the Royal Rumble. I'm not expecting Rock to change his mind. Nobody expected Bret Hart to change his mind either, but he did, so I suppose anything's possible. But can they get The Rock to change his mind before WrestleMania? I don't see it happening. And it may be a moot point anyway if Rock has a movie he has to go film. Rock wants to guest host Raw, but he does not want to wrestle a match. We'll see what happens. Dr. Death, Steve Williams, passing away this past week at the age of 49. This is very depressing news. Doc had been stricken with throat cancer several years ago, and he went through hell, but he battled back, and he actually beat the cancer. And took up a job at one point working for Southwest Airlines. Very much enjoyed his job. This was after he had worked for a time as a developmental trainer for WWA, I believe in OVW. And one of the things that Doc did not like about that job was the perception that the students didn't really care much about wrestling history, and they really didn't listen to him all that much. There was one story Dave Meltzer tells. He was bothered by the fact that these kids just didn't seem to care, the kids who were in this particular class. And I don't know if anybody in that class at that time is currently on the active WWE roster or not, but Doc went and actually brought in copies of a book. I don't know if it was his book or another book about Japanese wrestling. It was a book that he wanted them to read. He wanted them to study it. And he was going to quiz them on it. And he told them this. And so he comes back, I don't know if it was the next day or the next week, to quiz them and ask them questions about the book. And literally only one person read the book. And everybody else basically blew him off. And he took that as a sign of disrespect. I take that as a sign of disrespect, and I'm not even in the wrestling business. Ironically, I think the one person who may have actually read the book was Ezekiel Jackson. I don't know if it was him or not. I do know that Zeke was one of the people that caught a lot of eyes in OVW back then, because he was known to be a student of the game. So maybe it was him. He might have been the only one. But anyway, that job didn't last very long for Doc. And he did take up another job later on, working for Southwest Airlines. Was living life and was happy that he had survived. He wrote a book, which I think is now out of print, unfortunately, because How Dr. Death Became Dr. Life, I think, was the name of it. I think that publication house has gone out of business, so I don't even know if the book is still available, but the cancer had come back fairly recently, which was just devastating news. I mean, he went through hell with the chemo and the radiation treatments that first time, and I know from personal experience, just dealing with it with my mother and other members of my family, chemo is no fun. It's just sick, sadistic stuff. It's the best weapon we have right now against that insidious disease, but it really takes a toll on you. And I saw what it did to my mom, for example, but to think that, you know, it would take such a toll on such a larger-than-life guy like Dr. Death tells you all you need to know about how cancer can beat you down. But he survived it. When it came back, obviously it was, you know, demoralizing to find out about that. But he had become a man of religion in recent years, and he just kept a very optimistic attitude about things. And he figured, I beat it once, I'm going to beat it again. And the treatment, you know, the one thing you need to know about cancer, I think this is pretty universal for any type of cancer. If you have something and you beat it and it comes back, you don't want it to come back. Because if it does, your chances of survival long-term diminish greatly. It usually, when it comes back, does so with a vengeance. And I guess that's kind of what happened here. The funny thing, actually it's not funny at all, but the thing about it that people don't realize, in most situations, this is not true universally, but in most situations, it's not the cancer that kills you. It's the treatment. And that's why a lot of people are hesitant to undergo, you know, chemotherapy and radiation. I mean, chemotherapy in and of itself it's basically toxic treatment. It's toxins being pumped into your body. It's like poison, you know, being pumped and injected into your body. You know, and I think a lot of people who haven't thankfully had the experience of dealing with cancer don't realize this. It's not the cancer that kills you. It's the wear and tear of the treatment that just beats you down. And then usually it'll be something else that kills you. In some cases, and Doc, I think, is an example of this. You'll have so much chemotherapy and so much treatment that it wears you down, and it wears down your immune system to the point that even a simple infection or a flu, once your defenses are down, can be fatal. I think what happened with Doc, he had to undergo some more surgery. Again, it was cancer of the throat. And, you know, Dawn Marie's Wrestlers Rescue, all the wrestlers, they've been trying for months and months and months now to raise enough money for Doc to buy one of those voice boxes so he can speak, because I believe he had to have his vocal cords removed. I don't think he was able to speak anymore. And anyway, from the surgery, I guess he actually had a hole in his throat that you could literally see through. And he was in bed, I believe it was Tuesday night, I want to say. And it was something the doctors had warned might happen when you have a hole in your throat like that and it's exposed. You know, there could be a rupture of an artery. Your throat may fill with blood. That's essentially what happened, I believe, is his throat began to fill with blood. He tried clearing his throat. He couldn't. He went into the next room where his 87-year-old mother was, and I guess to help and to alert her as to what was going on, and he just collapsed. I think he basically just collapsed and suffocated. And his mother also has health issues, and she has one of these things on her that you push a button and it calls 911. And when the paramedics got there, they actually were able to revive Doc not once but twice, which shows how tough he was trying to fight this thing. But the third time, he could not kick out, so to speak, and that was it. A sad end to what, by all accounts, was a really gentle giant of a man. He was a beast. If you ever saw him wrestle in the ring in Japan and the States, he was a monster. Behind the scenes as a person, Steve Williams was anything but. And it just seems like these things tend to happen to the good people. It's just a sad situation all around. You know, he did have children. He was only 49 years old. Bill Watts and Jim Ross in particular were really close to Doc. I know it hit JR pretty hard. A couple of days later, he finally mustered up enough courage to put up a blog about Dr. Death. You know, one of the few cases, you can't say that it was caused by steroids or a drug overdose or anything like that. You know, there have been other examples. Earthquake, for example. John Tenta, back in 2006, he passed away due to bladder cancer, which also hit me pretty hard because I'm a fan of the WrestleCrap website, and so was John. John became kind of connected to that website. He almost became a friend of everybody in the community over there and had his own message board forum where he would answer questions, and he was a funny guy. And I know when he passed away, it really hit a lot of people hard, and that seems to be the case with Dr. Death. We'll see if they have some sort of tribute. Obviously, Monday night is a big wrestling night, so maybe they don't want to sour the night by putting up a graphic. I would hope they do it, but they didn't do it with Umaga, who was also beloved backstage by the people that worked there and competed for WWE a hell of a lot more recently than Dr. Death, so I won't hold my breath on that. All right, let's get to some of your questions, and then when I'm done, I will give my final revised ratings predictions for Raw vs. Impact this Monday. Start off here with a letter from James. Dear Solid Monster, this is a big if HBK and Undertaker do wrestle at WrestleMania again, it cannot be called HBK Undertaker 2, as is rumored. It would be more like number 5 or 6, wouldn't it? They have had several matches together in 97 and 98. Well, this would technically be HBK Undertaker 5. Their first match was Ground Zero in September of 97. Then, of course, the next month was Hell in a Cell. And then 2 months after that was the casket match at the Royal Rumble, where Shawn suffered that temporarily career-ending back injury. Last year would have been the fourth encounter between them on television. This would be number 5. But no, it's HBK Undertaker 2, and I'll tell you why. Because that was a different era. It's almost like BC and AD. It really was a different world and a different era. They don't care so much about that. In fact, I talked about it last week, I think. The one poor thing they did in the build-up to the match last year was the lack, I felt, of drawing upon those earlier matches. So they did mention at one point that these two have fought before, and I think everybody pretty much knows that Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker were in the very first Hell in a Cell match, but they didn't really talk about those old matches so much. They focused on the current, and I think that's what they will do now. They're not going to talk, especially now that they had the one match last year, they're not going to go back suddenly and talk about the matches from 1997. They're not going to call it HBK Undertaker 5, because to most people, this is their second encounter. It's a different era. So if that's how they want to do it, I have no problem with it. And if you think they're going to change their minds, I wouldn't hold my breath on that. It's not a big deal anyway, if you think about it. I don't care what number they give it. If they're going to give us the match, then just give it to us, and I think it'll be a great match. Beyond that, I really don't sweat the small things. Chestnuts wrote into the podcast, not with a question, but a very nice comment. Dear Solid Monster, I haven't wrote you in a while, and I'd like to say, I hope you had a Merry Christmas and have a Happy New Year. Well, thank you, Chestnuts. I celebrated the New Year with friends locally at somebody's house. I thought about doing the city thing here in New York, and I'm sure most cities, you know, they'll have things at bars and clubs, and bars that are just these shitty bars where you just go in for free on most nights of the week, and you pay $5 for a bottle of beer and $8 for a Jack and Coke. On New Year's Eve, to go into one of these crappy old little bars is like $100. And the clubs with bottle service don't even get me started. To me, it didn't seem worth it. And we were able to get enough people together to go over to somebody's house for free. So it worked out well. Ringing in the New Year with friends, and then New Year's Day I slept. Because I definitely needed it. Had to rest up for January 4th. But thank you, I do appreciate the holiday thoughts. Another fan here, Jose, writes in, I know you're a busy man, but I wanted to wish you a happy and safe New Year. Well, thank you, Jose. I do appreciate that. have a gift in the mail on the way to you, a signed copy of my new book. No, I'm kidding. Channeling Bill O'Reilly there for a second. All right, our buddy Luis writes in, I hope you've seen and enjoyed the movie Avatar. I actually haven't seen it. I was supposed to see Avatar last week. My cousin was going to buy the tickets, and then she told me that for a 7 o'clock showing, she tried getting the tickets at 12 noon that day, and it was already sold out. This was the IMAX 3D showing, not the regular 3D showing. Because to me, to see this movie in anything but IMAX is completely pointless. And all the IMAX showings were sold out. Then again, this is New York, and we were trying to see the movie in Manhattan, like Times Square, which is my favorite theater over there, the AMC Empire 25. But it is Times Square around the New Year, so I guess it's not all that shocking it would be sold out. We're going to try to go again at the end of the week. I've heard the movie itself, from a story perspective, is okay, but the visuals are just fantastic, so I'm looking forward to seeing it. Anyway, if you could be a fly on the wall during any of these events, which would it be? Number one, Joey Styles punching JBL last year during the, I believe that was during the Tribute to the Troops tour. Number two, the locker room just minutes after the Montreal Screwjob. Number three, the backstage area during the Benoit tribute show as details of the event began to come out. Or four, creative meetings prior to Bash at the Beach 1996 or 2000. Or again, Survivor Series 1997. Without question, it would be the locker room after Montreal. And you could get a glimpse of that, by the way, if you watch the Wrestling with Shadows, the Paul Jay documentary from 1998 about Bret Hart. I actually just watched it yesterday. I haven't seen Wrestling with Shadows from start to finish, maybe since I originally saw it. It's just been years and years, and I felt there's no better time for me to watch this movie again than now with Bret Hart's imminent return. And I watched it, and again, it reminded me of two things. One, it's a really good film that you should all check out if you haven't already. And actually, I think it's something called the National Canadian Board of Movies or something. There is a website online that has Wrestling with Shadows on there streaming for free. I don't know what the link is. I don't have it on me. But I know for a fact you don't even have to, you know, buy the DVD or anything like that. You can find it online. I would definitely recommend watching it. But the other thing I realized watching it, again, I mentioned this earlier, is just the absurdity of the whole situation. I think watching it in 2010 with the perspective of somebody from 2010, it's comical to watch them make such a big deal out of losing a wrestling match and the championship belt, you know. But again, this was when the belt still meant something, you know, before it started changing hands every week with Vince Russo in 99. And of course, in recent years, having three different world titles has certainly watered things down. And I think I did a count. Somebody sent in some stuff to me a couple weeks ago with a podcast that said both the WWE belt and the World Heavyweight belt had changed hands something like 8 or 9 times this year. So, you know, that's what happens when you start to, you know, when you start treating the belt like a hot potato. But definitely the Montreal Screwjob. To be there would have been a surreal experience, I think. Just all the things that were going down. Nobody knew what the fuck was going on. The people who did know what was going on couldn't believe what they had just seen. Bret Hart comes backstage. We all know what ended up happening. He's in this, and you can see this in Wrestling with Shadows. Bret and Shawn are now changing in the same locker room, and Bret looks over at Shawn. You can't see Shawn on camera, but he's talking to Shawn Michaels and says, Shawn, you weren't in on that? And of course, Shawn Michaels denies the whole thing, and he's like, God is my fucking witness. You know, this was before, of course, he became a great Christian. And Vince McMahon and his posse, which included Gerald Briscoe, Shane McMahon, Sergeant Slaughter, they all come walking into the dressing room. Unfortunately, Bret told, you know, Paul Jay to turn the camera off at that point, so we never did get it on film. But we all know what happened at that point. Bret Hart warned Vince McMahon, I'm going to give you the time that it takes me to get in the shower and get out to get out of my locker room, because if you're still standing here, I'm going to knock you out. And, you know, Vince, of course, was pleading his case and saying that he's never lied to Bret before. And Bret then, of course, just completely embarrasses him in front of everybody by rattling off at least 5 or 6 different lies that Vince had told him in just the last couple of weeks. So anyway, and of course, Undertaker, this was before Vince ultimately went to Bret's locker room. Vince had locked himself in his dressing room. And Undertaker, who was there that night but did not wrestle on the pay-per-view, ironically, was completely upset and pissed off with what had just happened. And he went and literally banged on Vince McMahon's door. And when he opened it, he said, you better go apologize to him right now. And that's the only reason Vince went to apologize to Brett is because Undertaker told him to, or else there were going to be problems. So that would be my pick, the Montreal Screwjob for sure. Derek in Iowa writes in, Dear Solid Monster, do you think the WWE will change its thinking and overall quality of their programming if TNA exceeds expectations in the coming months or the next year? Or do you think it'll still be the same crap from both promotions? I think we're going to get the same crap from both promotions, at least in the short term. But if TNA does okay on Monday night, and whether they move to Monday in 6 months or if they stay on Thursdays, this is a new era, the Hogan era. If they get completely squashed on Monday, which is exactly what I expect to happen, it doesn't matter. This is the dawning of a new day for TNA. If they can up their game, if they can bring in some big names, and they can really turn the corner and turn the page and make their product better, competition drives everybody. I think it'll help WWE make their product better, too. So don't get me wrong. People, you know, they have these misconceptions that I'm not a fan of TNA. I want to see them fail. I would love to see TNA succeed. I don't care if it's on a Monday night or a Thursday night. Monday night would be kind of cool just because I miss those days of flipping back and forth. I hate commercials with a passion, and so when Raw would go to commercial, I'd put Nitro on and vice versa. I want to see TNA do well, and as somebody who grew up a Hulk Hogan fan, I'd love to see Hogan succeed in TNA as well and kind of do a little bit to curb this perception of him as nothing more than a backstage politician who's out for himself, even if it is true. If Hogan can do half the things that he claims he's coming in to do, it's nothing but good news for TNA. As long as we don't see Brutus Beefcake come in a couple of weeks and beat Jay Lethal, like Tatanka and Jim Neidhart have done in recent weeks, and I can't explain that at all, but then TNA will be in good shape. And I think it'll help WWE up their game and motivate them as well. If Ultimate Warrior does in fact go into the Hall of Fame this year, who should induct him? So many people dislike him, the most likely current superstar I'd imagine would be fellow rope shaker Batista. Well, Batista would totally make sense. Batista has said before that he very specifically stole the rope shake from the Ultimate Warrior. He grew up a Warrior fan, so Batista would make sense. Personally, I'd love to see Triple H do it, just because I'm an asshole, and I know it would kill Triple H to have to induct Warrior into the Hall of Fame. Okay, ratings prediction time here at the end of the first podcast of 2010. This is what you all have, I'm sure, have been waiting for with bated breath. I think I gave some predictions a week or two ago, but these are the final revised predictions pre-January 4th. I cannot change them after I say them. This is it. This is what I think the two shows will do on Monday night. Now, nobody knows for sure, but I think I'm going to come pretty close. I'm going to go ahead and say that Raw pulls into 3.9 on Monday night. Raw actually did a 3.6 last week, which is up from what it's been doing recently, and that's good news because the more people who know about Bret Hart showing up, I think the more people who will watch. I know the Fiesta Bowl is on, I think Fox or ABC or whatever it is on Monday night. I'm not a huge college football fan. I don't know how the Fiesta Bowl typically does. I do know the two teams in it. I don't think it's the best Fiesta Bowl match that's ever been put together. So assuming that football will take little, if anything, out of the wrestling audience, I think a 3.9 is a safe bet for Raw. It's been a long time since we've seen Raw hit a 4.0 or above. It's not, in fact, I don't remember if Raw has done a 4.0 in the last couple of months. I don't think they have. I believe the last time they hit a 4 or above was the commercial-free Donald Trump show in the summer. And that got a 4.5. I don't think they're going to go that high, but I do think it'll be the best rating since that show. So I'll say a 3.9 for Raw. And for the 3 hours of Impact, I think the first hour will do the best, and then it's just going to drop off a cliff. I'm going to go ahead and say a 0.8. And I think if they do a 0.8, they should be very, very happy. TNA has been averaging a 1, maybe a 1.1 the last few months. And I think for them to get a 0.8, it would mean that a majority of their usual audience followed them to a new night. They didn't pick up any new viewers, but they didn't get completely squashed. I mean, 3.9 to 0.8 is still just an utter, you know, annihilation. But I think if they did get a 0.8, like I said, TNA and Spike should be happy with a rating like that. I think the problem here is that if people know they can watch a replay of this show on Thursday, and by the way, they are replaying the entire 3-hour show on Thursday. They're not putting in a brand new first-run programming, which I think is a big mistake because it's going to be something like 10 days after the big Monday night special before you get a new TNA show. Talk about stalling momentum. But I think if people know they can just watch Bret Hart on Raw Monday and then just watch Impact on Thursday, they may do that anyway. So I don't know what the Thursday rating will be, but on Monday I'm predicting a 0.8 for the 3 hours of Impact, a 3.9 for Raw, an utter thrashing. I said it before, if Impact were to beat Raw, I would shave my head bald. I'm not worried in the least that that is going to happen. And there you go. That's my prediction. Other than that, you know, I sit here, I do this podcast, I analyze things. That's just what I like doing. You don't have to do that. You can listen to me. You cannot listen to me. At the end of the day, when the TV shows go on tomorrow night, it's all about fun. You know, let them worry about all that bullshit. Let them worry about what the competition is doing. When 8 o'clock hits tomorrow night, I will have my TV set to Spike. And I will be watching Impact, and I will be hoping for a good show. Whatever surprises they may or may not have up their sleeve. When 9 o'clock hits, I'm flipping over to Raw. I don't have the luxury of DVR or anything like that, so I may not be able to see all of Impact, you know, in full until Thursday, but I will flip. I will enjoy both shows. And as a wrestling fan, it may be the most fun that any of us have had in nearly a decade. And so to you, I say, I hope you have as much fun watching these shows as I will. And next week, Sound Off 96. For better or worse, I am sure that I will have much to say about the Raw vs. Impact head-to-head battle. I'm looking forward to it quite a bit. If you have feedback, thesolomonster@gmail.com is the email address as always. Hit me up on Twitter at twitter.com/solomonster. I'd like to just devote all my attention to the shows on Monday, but I may do some live blogging during the shows, especially if something big happens. So if you're at all interested in that sort of thing, go to my Twitter page. If you don't have a Twitter account, it's free. It doesn't cost you a thing. You can make a page. It doesn't mean you have to Twitter or tweet or whatever the hell it's called, whatever the exact terminology is. Do follow me on there, twitter.com/Solomonster. And, of course, you can download the show each and every week on iTunes. There should be no more outages at all. I finally bit the bullet. I'm now paying money to host this podcast. I make no money off this thing whatsoever. I've been trying to avoid this at all costs because, like I said, it's not something I do to make money, but I had to pay the, whatever it is, $5 now a month or whatever it is I'm paying to host it on the Podbean service. So it should not go down if too many people download it. Tell your friends. Tell your family. Let everybody in the world download it. And the podcast should not go down. So you can subscribe through iTunes, and it will be automatically delivered to you each time a new episode goes up. It's really convenient, and that about does it. So enjoy the Monday Night War. Be back next week with a new podcast. Thank you so much, all of you that have come over with me to the new year, and those of you who are new to the podcast, hopefully you will get as much out of it as I do recording it each and every week. So until next time, be well, stay safe, enjoy the war Monday night. See you next week.
You've been listening to The Solomonster.
You know, I really just don't understand what they're doing. Anybody agree with me out there? I mean, anybody. Come on, throw me a bone here.
Probably the single dumbest thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
God, I love this business.
On SE Scoop.